welcome at Y, and actually at the one of the most beautiful tents there is in Trax, and actually it's quite a diverse one, because actually we're now going to listen to Dina, and Dina is actually a linguist for more than 20 years. She is since her also a hacker, and since a few years she's also teaching people the Dutch language as a second language. And it's actually quite nice, because I think she will, her interests are not maybe the computer programming, but actually making the art of language, actually, like programming for a lot of people. And I see there is a lot of interests, because there is quite a lot of people over here right now, and I'm quite excited to hear all the things I know and didn't know yet about the Dutch language. So give a big applause to Dina and enjoy your talk.
Thank you. Dank u wel. First of all, I was so lucky. I put up my tent here. I can hear everything that happens inside this tent, so I can crawl in here to have my talk, which is good because I'm not much of a morning person. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking about Dutch, and the talk is about language, and to illustrate it about the Dutch language, and it's going to be about linguistics, so the structure of languages, not just one specific one, but how languages are constructed all over, and a little bit how we perceive them in the brain. It's about Dutch, and you may see that some people have a paper, and on it are some words and phrases. I called it wat en hoe in het Nederlands, and there's some more over there, and our Herald is being so kind as to distribute it to those that still want them. I won't be going through them right now, but at the end of the talk, I will read some along. Okay. For now, I hope this talk will be fun, which is why I called it Dutch fun. And I'm Dina. I live in Amsterdam, so getting here was also quite easy for me. I'm a bit of a lazy person. Okay. The structure of this talk will be that I will be talking things about different fields of linguistics. There are very many fields, and I'll be talking about some of them. First of all, about orthography, which is a fancy word for spelling. Then there is a sheet about phonetics, which are sounds. Sounds in one language, but sounds in one language can be quite different from the sounds in a different one, which is why sometimes people who learn a language, a second language, have an accent or a very thick accent when they're trying to speak another one. Phonology is also about sounds, but how these sounds are grouped, because sometimes within a language there are different ways to pronounce, different sounds you can use that can be grouped together. For instance, in Dutch, the sound R can be pronounced, sometimes depending on the place in the word, can be pronounced as an R, but also as a r or as an r, and all of them correspond to the same letter and the same phoneme r. Another field, so I'm going from small to big, a bit bigger field is called morphology, and it concerns with words. After that, I'll talk about syntax, which is how words are grouped into sentences. Then there is some talk about semantics, especially the semantics part will be about English and Dutch. So I will be talking about words, English words that are not possible in Dutch and the other way around. So that's about word meaning. And then there is prosody, which is a small and not so well-known topic, and it concerns the tone and also the stress of words and the rhythm and even the melody of sounds, which is why it's called prosody, are called extra segmental parts. So the segments of words are the sounds, but extra on top of the segments, there can be a tone or a stress. And that's, there are more fields of linguistics, but they're not in the scope of today's talk. So, without further ado, let's continue with orthography. Basically, there are three different types of spelling a language. The first one is the one that Dutch and English and many, many other languages use, and it's called an alphabet. And in that case, you denote one sound is one symbol. This is easy if you use, for instance, a keyboard, because there will be only 20, 30. Sometimes there are alphabets with 40 keys, but that's about the maximum. Another type of orthography is syllabic, and then you don't denote a sound, but a syllable. And a syllable contains often a vowel and a consonant together. The Japanese have a syllabic orthography, two of them actually, and if you denote syllables, it will mean that you will have many more symbols, like around 100, so that they don't fit onto, for instance, a keyboard. You have to learn a bit more symbols. You have to find a different way to write. And then there's Chinese, and you probably all know there are many, many symbols in Chinese, which makes it difficult to remember all these symbols, and it makes it also very difficult to create a dictionary that you can sort all these symbols in and look them up. What I say here is that how you spell a language doesn't actually say anything about the sounds or the language that you use. And if you compare two different languages, you will often use the same alphabet, which is why orthography is not exactly, it's a bit on the periphery of linguistics. And instead of using the spelling that a language typically has, we can use IPA. You probably heard of the International Phonetic Alphabet. It's a set of symbols, a very big set of symbols that denote sounds. So like an alphabet, doesn't denote anything bigger like a syllable. And the sounds that are possible in all languages in the world. There are different features to these sounds. There are different categories. As I say here, the place of articulation, that refers to, if you look at consonants, basically where your tongue touches your, or where you create the friction so that there is a sound. So if I say, for instance, a B, it's a bilabial sound. Bi is two, labial is a lip. So I'm using two lips, that's the place of articulation to create a B. But are different. If you look in Arab languages, there can be a g, g, which is all the way down the throat. So that's a completely different place of articulation. And then there can be places in between, like the palate, the for Hamilton in Dutch, nga, nga, and so on. And a lot in between. So that's why there are so many different sounds, and that's why it can be so tricky to learn a specific sound in if you're learning a second language. Another categorization is a stop fricative continuant. A stop sound is a sound that you cannot continue, like the bilabial B, but you cannot say B, but it stops. A fricative has friction, like you can continue it, but you surely hear there's some sort of friction. Whilst a continuant, all vowels are continuants, like you can sing them. They carry, usually they carry the syllable. Particular sounds that I found out that language learners in Dutch find tricky or very difficult. One of them is the G sound, the G sound. Some people approach it by saying ha, but unfortunately in Dutch, the ha sound is written by an H, and it's a completely different sound. So you have to, as a foreigner, you have to be able to make the difference between huis and gruis, for instance. And I write down g and ch because ch is an alternative way to write down. Sometimes we write the g sound with ch in the language. And a vowel that's difficult is the u. U is a double vowel, so unlike the ah that continues all the way, the u contains starts at one place and then goes to another place in the mouth. And you see my face, my lips move as well. Many people, at first, they have trouble making an au and turn it into an au. And the au is a completely different sound in Dutch. Why is this also difficult? Because there are not many languages that contain the au sound. So not many people get this sound for free from their mother tongue. Well, you may see all this time that there is a YouTube thing coming up. The YouTube thingy is about something what is from the Ghana. They have a language called Igbo, and they have double consonants. And double consonants are two different consonants at the same time, which is weird, and I cannot really do it, so that's why I wanted to play a clip. And let's hope this works.
Learn double consonants, mbochume mpi, in Igbo language. We are going to learn double consonants in Igbo language now. There are 9 double consonants in Igbo. We are going to read them. Chi, B, Re, We, B, We, We, Nye, She. Let us read again.
Again, yeah.
Number 1 is Chi, B, Re, We, B, Hui, mui, nye, shi. Have you not seen that they are nine in number? Let's count them. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah. Count
4,
them.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Nine.
We call it in Igbo, Mgbochu Mempe. Mgbochu Mempe. That is
oh,
double consonant.
Can I stop it? Yeah, so what you see is that it starts with ch and sh, which we know from some European languages, not too difficult. But the other ones, they're like, whoa, I'd have to go there and learn for a long time before I would be able to pronounce these things. So that's why the IPA character sets, the IPA is so big, because for each small different sound, there has to be a different symbol. If you have all these sounds, phonology is the next stop in which you group them. And I'm going to give you an example, which is about the phoneme P. It's a plosive, P, like the, it's also bilabial, like the B I showed. The only difference is the P, your voice doesn't. Try this. Put your finger on your throat and say B and P. So the first time, B, you feel your throat moving, and the P, it doesn't. That's called voicing, and that's the difference. That's the only difference between the two sounds. For both sounds, we, or no, well, let's look at the P, the P, in the word pin and spin. They're not exactly the same sound, because in pin, pin, there is a P, pin. We call this aspiration, and we denote it as a small, super script, H. So pin and spin. Why do I have that aspiration? Well, there may be, we say the environment is that if the consonant is alone, so the P is alone, we add the aspiration. If it's not alone, so it's, there's an S preceding it, we don't need the H. Okay. That's why we write them both in English with a P, because there's no need to make a difference between them. And we perceive them as the same sound. However, in Korean, we also have the P and the P, but they are two different sounds, and thus this is what we call phonemes, two different phonemes. So, as illustrated by, well, there's a nice symbol that I copy-pasted, but it says pool, which is fire, but pool is grass. So, if you have all these, if you are observing a new unknown language and you have all the symbols that are used, you group them, because in English it would be useless to have a different symbol for the P and the P. It would only make things complicated. But in Korean you need it, because otherwise you wouldn't know the difference between fire and grass. I like phonology, which is why we have to move on to the next category. Oh no, sorry, there is a, ooh, there's more. I added the animations to the slides later to capture your attention better. Okay, this is a process called final obstruent devoicing. So an obstruent is a bit like a stop sound, and final means in the end. An example of a final obstruent is the D sound. So the word bed, which means bed, which means bed in Dutch, we pronounce it bed. Why? Because it's at the end of the word and it loses the voicing. So I just gave the example of the B and the P. For the D and the T, the same holds. A D has voicing, the T does not. So the voicing of bed, we say leave it out. But if it's a plural, there it's not at the end of a word, then we say bedden, and it's a D, it's still voiced. In English, you don't have this rule, this phonological rule. So that's why you hear, to me it's already a little bit difficult, you hear the difference between, in English we say bed, in Dutch we say bed. Beginners, Dutch people learning English, are likely to say bed, and then you can catch them from their accent that they're not English, but Dutch. Or German, or Catalan, or Breton, or Russian, or Lithuanian, or Turkish, or Wolof. Because sometimes these rules, these phonological rules, are processes that take place in different languages. Why is these languages? Because some of them are European, but Wolof is from... where is it? Senegal region. So it's probably more of a biological thing than a social context, the reason that they happen to have the same rules. Okay, so far for phonology. The next topic is going to be morphology. There is a very much to say about morphology, which studies the tokens or words of a language and their internal structure. Often this goes about, this is about grammar. So conjugations, like the boring German and Latin conjugations, that all has to do with morphology. But I'm just going to talk about articles. In English, there are two articles, a, which is if you don't know something yet, indefinite, and the, so there's a house, and now we know it's a house, we say this is the house. Dutch has something similar, we say een huis, and then we say het huis. But, as I say below, Dutch has two definite articles, so we say het sometimes, but a bit more often we say de, and they both mean the. It's a difference in gender. Het is neutral gender, de is male or female gender. This is tricky. All foreigners have to learn when it is de, when it is het. And this difference is not very useful. So it's tricky and it's not even useful. So there is a tendency over the years to say more and more just de in Dutch. People say it's ugly style, but it's practical. If you look at the article in Norwegian, they say et hus, which means a house. Okay, similar. But for the house, they say huse. So it comes after, and it's part of the word. So that's a different morphological phenomenon for the articles. And then last of all, some languages, many Slavic languages, do not have articles at all. They do have different processes to show whether it's a house that you first see or that you've seen before. But it's not in the same way. And sometimes you hear that from people who forget to pronounce the, to say the articles because they were not present in their mother tongue. Okay, that was an example of morphology. Next up is syntax. So, syntax, and in Dutch we call it syntaxis, is about trees. So, usually you can represent a sentence as a directed graph starting with sentence, and then you have a verb and the subject consists of an article and a noun and so on. And what you do when you produce or you understand a sentence is that you create or you try to compile that syntax tree so that you understand what's being said. So that's what we're doing every day in conversation. Then, the last thing, if you can't parse the what you hear into a syntax tree, or if your syntax is a sentence is ambiguous, which means that there is more than one possible tree that you can build, this can lead to confusion and sometimes arguments. Because if you usually you don't say, my syntax tree was a little bit different from yours, from what you intended. So sometimes you only find out later when you were arguing. Then, semantics. Now we're going to focus a little bit more on Dutch. So semantics is about the meaning of words. And I've just given you some examples. These are examples of false friends between English and Dutch. Words that appear to be the same, but they have different meaning. And the reason for that difference, they can be etymologically related. They can have the same origin, but somehow turned the meaning differed over the years. Or the two words are just not related, and they just look a little bit similar. So one tricky one is in English, eventual, and Dutch, eventueel. So eventueel in Dutch means possibly, while the words look very similar. A warehouse is, in Dutch we would call it a pakhuis or a groothandel. But that's the big industrial complex. And a warehuis, on the other hand, is a department store, like the HEMA we have here. An undertaker, that's funny. There have been politicians saying that Nederland is a nation of undertakers. So that means entrepreneurs in Dutch. The word stout, that's a coincidental, dental, because it's a small word. It's by coincidence that they look similar. But stout means naughty, especially about a child, you say stout. And then the last two are related to an anecdote about a Dutch politician, Josef Luns, who visited JFK. And nobody can confirm whether this really, really happened, because this was before, you know, all the TikTok videos and everything. But JFK asked him whether he had hobbies, and Josef Luns said, yeah, I fuck horses. So he breeds horses, to which he responded, pardon? And Joseph said, yes, pardon. And then I looked into whether fuck and fuck are related, because of meaning-wise that they could be. It's a long story, and I couldn't quite. I mean, because they both go back to an older word going like fuck or fa. So I don't know. I really don't know. These, now I have a list of Dutch words that don't have one single translation. So there are whole books of words that are specific to one language. Usually they're quite romantic, you know, the feeling you have if you are overcome with sadness looking at a snowy valley in Russia, for instance. I found some. I'm in a Dutch teacher group, and I asked for some examples of untranslatable words and I found they came with those, which are not that romantic. Bottle. Does anyone know what a bottle is? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so drinks. Drinks with students, drinks with the colleagues after work. There's always an excuse for a bottle. So usually it's translated with drinks, but it's more than that. It's bottle. Happy hour, but okay, and then usually the bottle, especially if it's from work, is for free, so there is no payment involved. So that's drinks. There is the vrijmiddag, the vrijdagmiddagborrel. This one is relatively new, but so they made an acronym of the word vrijdag. Friday, middag, it's the afternoon, and borrel, again. So this is your borrel after the work week, usually also with work. Vrijmiddag. Then, related to the picture, is bruin fruit. So, this is brown fruit. I think the prototypical brown fruit is the bitterbal, which you see also on the picture. So, we also call it bitter garnituur, but bruin fruit is a bit more funny. It sounds, but it just sounds gross because fruit shouldn't be brown. But of course, it's mixed with the happiness and the gezelligheid. Gezellig is another word that is typically Dutch of the bottle, the vrijdagmiddag bottle. Klinen. This is a verb. Quite specific. If you go ice skating on a long trip and there is no ice, for instance, because there is a bridge, if you have to cross a bit, then you have to be on your skates, but you're not on the ice. And it's a very tiresome. You don't want to go klunen too far. So it's especially a word that's used when we have ice on the waters, which hasn't been much lately, and then especially with the Elfstedentocht, the 11 cities tour. And last of all, not the fingerwerk. Literally, this means wet finger work. And it means if you do something, how did I write it? Do a rough job, an estimation. It's like, so you're not really measuring, you're just doing nothing fair. And the origin of this is a way to know from which side the wind blows, which is about there, because you feel your finger getting dry or cold, and then you have an estimation of where the wind blows. The last field is prosody, and funny enough, not all tone and stress are part of prosody, because these parts are extra meaning, like emotion you can put into your language. However, if in Dutch I can use a lot of tone and sound, for instance, agitated, but in Chinese this is not part of prosody, because tone is actually part of the meaning. There can be different words with different tones. And another thing about stress, as I say here, in French, stress is always on the last syllable, and it does not denote meaning. And this is a tough thing for French people learning a different language, Dutch or any language, is that they have to learn that stress can also be in different places and is a thing, and that they just, it's not always part of the rhythm of their sentence, but it can be a property of the words that they say. So in Dutch and in English, sometimes stress can denote meaning, not too often. And one example in Dutch is the difference between the verb voorkomen, which means to prevent, or the word voorkomen, which means to appear in court. So you'd like to voorkomen that you have to voorkomen. That's about all I wanted to say. I do have the words. Maybe that's another thing. So if you want me to pronounce some of the words on your sheets, or give you another information about that, or have any other questions, then feel free to say so. Thank you for your attention.
Hey, thanks for a really interesting talk. I have a question about Dutch, and that the pronunciation of S can be an S or an SH when speaking English. I was wondering what's the rule for that?
S and SH?
You said differences one time instead of differences. Like, I want to know what's the rule where you pronounce S as a SH sound in Dutch.
Do you have an example word, maybe?
Like the difference between one thing and another. Because I hear that a lot.
One thing is, we have the diminutive, if you make things smaller. And not some languages have this, like in French you can say Nina, Ninita. In Dutch we say meisje, laptopje. So we have a lot of, if you make something smaller, we add a ch or a sh to it. Maybe that's what you heard. Could be?
Yeah.
Pars?
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, that's true. The sh is further back, So maybe that's in some words.
Yeah, on one of your sheets, it said that Maastricht also, in the Maastricht dialect, there's also a difference for tone.
For the tone.
Do you have any examples of that?
One. a friend of mine is from, Maastricht, so it's South Limburg, right way down south in Holland. And it's the difference between singular and plural. So if you say a stone is a steen, and then stones is stein. So it's a bit difference between stein, stein. A flat tone and a falling tone.
Okay, I didn't know.
But because it's not as bad as in China, because the difference is just plural singular, so usually it's not confusing.
Yep. Yep. So one thing I've noticed speaking to Dutch people who are otherwise like totally fluent in English is the word idea, that they say is ID. And so, yeah, I've had an ID. I was wondering, does that point to a missing sound in the Dutch language?
Well, the Dutch word is idee. So maybe it's just, maybe that's why. And maybe it's also confusion with the identity ID. So they just get mixed up. But funny thing is that Dutch people, and maybe also English people, sometimes they say identiteitsbewijs. Instead of identity documents, they say indentity. So they type it as well. Oh, yeah.
Hey, can you also tell something about different pronunciation of the letter V? Because that is something that when I see, even I hear Dutch people speaking English, they sometimes say, like, thank you very much, especially people from the north.
Yeah.
And I believe,
yeah,
like, the V is very much like F in this area of Netherlands.
Yes, it's North Holland, so especially Amsterdam region, but more and more all over. This is once again voicing. So the V has your voice, and F does not. For some reason, in these dialects in Holland, we say F instead of V. Sometimes something in between, and the same with the Z and the S. One example from Amsterdam is to say that you go to Zandvoort, where you can see the zon in the zee zien zakken, while it's actually the zon in the zee.
In the beginning of the presentation, you mentioned that UI, like hers or turn, might be difficult for some. Is this something similar also happening with EU, like Kurken? Because I have a lot of colleagues from Africa, and they're really struggling with those vowels.
I find less difficulty, but people from South Africa who speak Afrikaans, they are very good at their vocabulary, but their vowels are, they really have to learn their vowels again, in a way. Which is, also the A, they say like, to me it's very straight, A in Dutch, but they say something like, A, A. So, yeah.
Yeah, just some comments about, you were talking about morphology, that there usually isn't really a function to the difference between articles. But, I mean, there is one in some cases, like, for example, with de schaatsen versus het schaatsen. the ice skates versus the act of ice skating and things like that, like the fishes, the yeah. act of fishing. So that's one thing.
Well, that's true, but then het schaatsen is take a verb and the action. So if you want to get rid of the article trouble, you could say the article is always de, except for het schaatsen, het lopen, het fietsen, for instance.
It would flow a little bit weird, though. just on that note about the word idea. I mean, of course, there's idee, but of course, in English, the EA can also be pronounced as one sound. Dear, yeah. Like
yeah,
my dear. So, dear ID. So who knows? That's thank you for the talk.
Could be.
Somewhere else, a question of this lovely talk, and quite funny. Yeah, completely in the middle, of course.
Okay. Again.
Yeah, it's a teamwork. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't speak any Dutch at all, so I may be completely wrong with this, but it's just a small observation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you said the word for syntax, it sounded to me, reading the word and hearing it, like you had reversed the last two letters, like the IS, that it ended in a sort of she sound, where I would have said, ish, maybe. And I've heard this before from Dutch speakers. I was talking online to somebody many years ago whose name was spelled B-A-B-S-J-E. And I'd have pronounced that Babzie, but it was Babzie. It seemed like the sound was reversed for the last two letters.
Excuse me, Babshi?
Yeah, it was an online name, so it's maybe not a proper uh-huh. name, but it was a Dutch person, and they seemed to pronounce the last two letters transversed, which just seemed odd to me at the time, and I thought I heard you do it again with the syntax word.
Do you mean the syntax and syntaxes word?
Yes, yeah, syntax. She was it. I'm mangling yes, it probably.
Yes, well, I've wondered because I've studied quite some syntaxes. Yeah. I don't know why we have the is in the yeah. word, because generally Dutch is quite loyal to the Latin and Greek spellings mm-hmm. of things. And even the pronunciation, as far as I know, because I'm Dutch. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Dina, for that wonderful talk. And I never knew that Dutch could be so funny, because I thought it was one of the most funniest talks I've already heard. So give it again a really big applause to Dina.